Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We still see 7 of 10 states across the Rockies and Great Plains reporting topsoil moisture more than 50%, very short to short. The states that have improved to below that threshold, Nebraska and the Dakotas, have had significant rainfall in recent days to improve conditions there.
On topsoil moisture, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
But looking at New Mexico coming in at 89%, very short to short, closely followed by Texas at 87%. I do want to point out that in the southeast, we've seen some sharp increases in topsoil moisture rated very short to short, led by South Carolina at 76%. Getting back to the wet side of the equation, we're still dealing with wetness in parts of the Midwest. Obviously, we have 5 states with topsoil moisture ranging between 20 and 40% surplus.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Livestock Indemnity Program, LIP Program. You and I talked about for those, you know, where they suffer mortality due to these blizzards is really in the smaller calves for the most part, that 250 pounds or less. We actually worked with our FSA director out in North Dakota, Marcy Svenningson, who is doing a fine job.
That's North Dakota Senator John Hoven talking to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
And one of the ideas we talked about was combining those two smallest weight categories in terms of the reimbursement rate as something that would really work. The 250 pounds and less doesn't work. It just doesn't compensate the rancher for what they lost there. If you actually combine the two bottom of the four tiers, it probably would work. That was an idea she put forward. I thought a very good one. And so I want to pose it to you as well.
Well, as you know, there were changes made in 2020 to create a new category. And we're certainly committed to taking a look at realigning the categories if it makes sense. Happy to do that. I would say, just as a general proposition, the questions you're asking, Senator, I think raise my opportunity to say, when you're looking at Farm Bill, I tell you, this notion of disaster assistance, the notion of helping farmers through difficult times because of climate-related circumstances, there has got to be a real thought behind this in terms of the flexibility, in terms of the capacity to adjust, depending upon conditions, because I think we're facing a much different set of circumstances than we have in the past relative to disaster. And I think your questions basically underscore that.
Right. And we've worked in that way to try to develop these programs, be it WIP Plus or what we do with some of the livestock programs, with the idea that we'll go into the Farm Bill and address them as part of the Farm Bill.
But it's important to understand the regional differences in the crop and the commodity differences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right on.
Testifying at a Senate Ag Committee hearing, Vilsack responding to whether rural development is ready to help.
Senator, I really appreciate that question because the answer is we don't have adequate staff. It's one of the reasons why we've requested in the President's FY23 budget additional resources to hire roughly 450 additional people in the rural development area. And I will tell you there's tremendous demand. Just to give you a sense of this, our business and industry loan program is basically out of money. There's so much activity and so much opportunity that's being created in rural places that those resources have been utilized, and we still have obviously several more months left in the fiscal year. So we're going to have to transfer resources to make sure that we can meet the demand. So it is an issue, and we hope that as Congress passes the budget that they pay attention to this issue of personnel.
Also, questions about a 30 by 30 initiative.
Senator, I'd be happy to commit to the fact that private property rights will be respected in connection with any activities relative to conservation. That this is voluntary, it's conservation-oriented, it's farmer-led. It's basically utilizing the conservation programs that you and I have been supportive of during our entire public careers. That's what this is. And we're going to continue to look for ways in which we can provide assistance and help to expand the ability of farmers and ranchers to utilize conservation tools. The details that you're going to get are the development of an atlas that is essentially going to keep track of the activities of farmers, ranchers, and producers relative to conservation. So, for example, we recently, Robert Bonney was out in Wyoming recently announcing a corridor initiative to a migratory corridor that's going to be protected. It's a partnership between the state of Wyoming, a number of those conservation hunting and angler groups to create a conservation corridor. Resources provided by the USDA, state resources, combining, leveraging, creating an opportunity for assistance. It's that type of program that I think it's collaborative. It's farmer-led. It's rancher-led. And I think, we're going to continue to emphasize the fact it's voluntary, and it's by all means going to respect private property rights.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As many folks are aware, in September of 2021, Congress appropriated a little over $10 billion for emergency disaster relief.
Cody Bessens with Plains Cotton Growers.
You know, Plains Cotton Growers, along with National Cotton Council, Southwest Council of Agribusiness, and a lot of other commodity organizations, as well as Congress as a whole, has been pressing USDA to implement the appropriated funds for emergency assistance as quickly and as easy and expedited as possible. And fortunately now, here we are, you know, relatively 8-9 months later, we have this new emergency relief program. Per se, it's relatively the same as WIP Plus. The only difference is it'll be streamlined and implemented more readily. In fact, forms are supposed to be going out, mailed out to producers and or the eligible participants this week. So producers should be looking and expecting for that. It'll be a pre-filled form utilizing information from RMA and FSA as far as determining the total disaster payments. That'll help curb some of the impact that producers have seen during the 2020 and 21 crop year as it relates to, in our case, drought. But as you get over to, we were talking about the West Coast a second ago, where they saw an immense amount of wildfires, where you get down in the southern Gulf Coast area, we saw hurricanes and over also into the Mississippi Delta, where it had some impact due to hurricanes as well. So it'll be much needed relief to help curb some of the loss that was incurred during those 2020 and 2021 crop years. It certainly will be helpful as we cash flow throughout this growing season and try to heal up from some of those losses that were incurred the last couple of years. But very timely relief as far as the implementation. Not a lot of changes to the program, minor than a few tweaks. So this one provides a little bit bigger assistance as far as disaster aid goes. In the event you tried to have a higher level of insurance coverage to offset the loss that the insurance wouldn't cover per se. So a couple of tweaks to it compared to WIP Plus, and then obviously renaming of the program to the Emergency Relief Program, ERP. But expected to go very quickly, very timely. Haven't ran into any challenges with it yet. But certainly would encourage as people receive those applications just to double check to make sure the information is accurate and correct. And if it's not, there are ways to try to mitigate that and correct that. But also, if there's any other issues that incur, certainly encourage them to reach out to us, and we can help try to address those issues or their local FSA office as well.
Cody Bessens is CEO of Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers on the Emergency Relief Program. That's administered, again, through USDA's Farm Service Agency, where the administrator, Zach Ducheneau, explains changes to CRP.
So the producer will need to make a written request to have this consideration given to them. And the important change is that producers can always, at the end of the contract, go in there and do some of these things. But there's typically a cost of that we withhold from that last rental payment. In this case, we're going to waive that so that the producer can go out there without any economic repercussions and do this again after the primary nesting season.
That's the administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau. Learn more online at farmers.gov. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Senator, it's my view that it's a crisis.
Testifying before the Senate Ag Committee, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on the worker shortage and problems with H-2A.
It's a crisis that could result in a number of particularly small and mid-sized farming operations not being able to sustain activities, particularly in the dairy industry. There is a need for stability. There is a need for a fix. There is a need for political courage to pass immigration reform. The Ag Modernization Act is a bill that both the industry and the labor has agreed upon, which should make it relatively simple to be for it. And it is I'll tell you, people are puzzled as to why this hasn't passed. When I travel and talk to farmers, they go, "We need to do something about labor. Why can't they get 60 votes in the Senate?" I don't have an answer for that.
Vilsack also taking questions from North Dakota Senator John Hoeven.
Because of excess moisture, North Dakota, Minnesota, some other states, our farmers are butting up against that end date whereby if they don't have their crops in the ground, be it corn, soybeans, whatever it is, that then they suffer discounts on crop insurance, which then, of course, causes them to go to prevented plant. Well, because they become concerned about that discount. Well, obviously, at a time of food inflation, we want as many of them as possible planting a crop. And so the proposal to you is through CCC or one of our programs to actually offer to cover some of that discount so that they'll actually go ahead and try to get those crops in the ground, even though they're going past that crop insurance end date. And so I think it's something to look at because it would actually save the USDA money, save the government money, from the standpoint of you're not paying out more prevented plant, you're paying out less by covering that discount, and at the same time you get more crops in the ground to help with food inflation. So that's the proposal to you, but it's something you'd need to move on pretty quick if you're going to do something to help there because obviously they're getting those crops in the ground now and they have to make those decisions.
Senator, is this the letter that was sent yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I haven't had a chance to review it, and I'm happy to talk to our team about it. I think part of the challenge that we face whenever we get into this particular area is making sure that we don't compromise the relationship between the insurers and the producers in terms of the overall crop insurance program, that we don't essentially create a circumstance where the risk is difficult for the crop insurance folks to be able to calculate. But I'm happy to take a look at what you all have written. And, we've exhibited in the past, we're more than happy to try to provide help and assistance where it makes sense.
Well, yeah, we appreciate that. And I did talk to members of your staff about it as well. And that's why we've pitched it in the format that we have so that you're not dealing with your insurance contracts and you don't run into any of those issues. So that's specifically why we've structured it the way we have.
On the ERP and ELRP programs.
On the crop side, there are roughly over 300,000 applications that are pre-filled that have gone out and are going out this week by Friday. All 300,000 will be in the hands of farmers. Pre-filled applications, so all they have to do is check a few boxes and sign it. There have already been a number of farmers that have come into the office and they've already received their checks. And I believe it's a matter of days once you basically file your application. You receive the resources. So that's the first phase, and we would expect the second phase sometime this summer after we've gotten a better understanding of precisely who wasn't covered by NAP, who wasn't covered by crop insurance, who wasn't covered by the livestock forage program, so that we would be in a position to be able to define the universe of that second tranche. But we wanted to get resources out as quickly as we could, and I think we've been able to accomplish that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Part of what we announced as part of our package to provide assistance and help to expand processing capacity today is a study that was required by the president's competition order that speaks a bit to this issue.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack up on Capitol Hill on Thursday before the Senate Ag Committee.
Secondly, our Office of Chief Economist's office is obviously engaged and involved in taking a look at the market and how concentration can potentially impact positively or negatively capacity and income. The fact that we had 263 applications for our $150 million, that almost $900 million in requests, $5 billion in projects, suggests that there is a real demand and need. And so I'm excited about the opportunity for us to use the resources that are available under the American Rescue Plan to begin creating more capacity and therefore more competition, which we think ultimately will lead to better prices. Obviously, the legislation that you all are working on, we look forward to when and if it's passed to be able to implement it in the way that you envision.
Also had an encounter with New Mexico Senator Ben Ray Lujan.
As you know, New Mexico is currently facing the largest fire in our state's history, having now burned over 311,000 acres and directly impacting farmers, ranchers, families, and rural communities across the state. I want to thank you and the United States Forest Service for the decision this week to pause all prescribed burns for 90 days while the department reviews the process, and also for the exemption that allows ranchers to be able to access U.S. forest lands where they have grazing permits. As you know, this was a prescribed burn, and recognizing that over 95%, 97% of prescribed burns don't result in this, I'm more interested in the 2% that do, because this has destroyed lives. Accessing grazing still remains a top concern with a lot of families in these communities, Secretary Vilsack. And so what I'm hoping is that I can have your commitment that you and the department will do all in your power to ensure ranchers in New Mexico have access to all available grazing and feed options, including allowing the emergency haying and grazing of land enrolled in CRP.
Senator, we'll be happy to work with you to make sure that we are responsive to the needs of your producers. It's a commitment I make to you, and it's a commitment I made to your governor when we met last week. I think it was last week or the week before last. Very difficult situation. Totally understand the concerns and stress that you and the folks in New Mexico are feeling right now.
The other area that I've been hearing from farmers is that they are being told they are not eligible for prevented plant payments this growing season because of changes to the crop insurance program made by the Trump administration. As farmers and ranchers across the West, and especially in New Mexico, continue to deal with historic drought and now wildfires, I find it very concerning that this vital risk management tool would remain unavailable to the producers who need it most. And so, Mr. Secretary, has the Biden administration examined the Trump administration's change to this program? And if so, why was the decision made to keep the change in place?
Senator, I think you're referring to preventive planning and the 1-in-4 rule. We have looked at it, and we actually have made changes in some areas for some commodities. I would say to you that our review is not finished. We need to continue to look for ways in which we can create flexibility for the very reason that you've addressed. So, yes, changes have been made, and I suspect and anticipate that there will be additional changes forthcoming.
I appreciate that. Where there's a lot of rain and water, I can understand with what the goal was to try to phase a little bit of this out. But back west where we don't have water, and now where families were devastated because of fire, if they were in 3 years of drought, the formula's kicking in. It's just a kick in the face.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
For beef and veal, it is still projected to increase between 6% and 7%. Similarly, pork prices are forecasted to increase between 6% and 7%.
Matt McLaughlin is an economist with USDA. He's taken a look at the new retail price forecast for beef, poultry, pork, and eggs.
Poultry prices have climbed, and we are forecasting now that will increase between 8.5% and 9.5%. And eggs was the most significant increase. We are now forecasting that egg prices will increase between 19.5% and 20.5% in 2022.
Well, let's turn to telling the message in D.C. Darren Kopic is president and CEO of the Ag Retailers Association.
We really prefer to do it in person in normal conditions. We'll have people fly in from all over the country. We have a winter board meeting as part of this, and then we do over 100 congressional visits in a single day. And so it's a busy scheduling effort for our policy staff, but it's a very good day, and people really feel like they're able to personally engage with their members of Congress and their staff. So that's our preferred way to do it. Unfortunately, when we were making the plans for this one, Washington, D.C. still had an indoor mask mandate. You still had to show your proof of vaccination to get into any buildings or into any restaurants in town. And so we made the decision at that time that we would switch it to virtual. And in so doing, we regionalized it. So instead of everything in one day, we did the Northwest 1 week and the South 1 week and the Midwest 1 week and extended it over about a 5-week period. And it allowed a lot more people to participate. Even members back at home could have more of their people plugged into these meetings and involved in their conversations. So we made the best of it. Members participated. I think we got a lot of good value out of it. But we really are looking forward to 2023 and hopefully doing it in person again.
But for the Ag Retailers Association, or ARA, there are a few other upcoming events.
Well, we're in that busy time of the year when I try not to pester my members any more than necessary. They're all trying to get fertilizer, spray, and service out the door to customers, and I try to stay out of their way as best I can while keeping them informed about things that they need to know. But we have a couple of application windows that are open for us. Our Retailer of the Year applications are open, and people are able to apply for those on the website. We have a Rising Stars program that recognizes up-and-comers in the industry. Great opportunity for a company to recognize somebody who's a futures or even a current star in the company. That application window is open as well. We've got a training opportunity coming up in August called Engage that we do with Corteva, where it actually trains people on how to talk about what you do when you're in front of somebody who's not an Aggie. So maybe that's at the Saturday lacrosse game or the Kiwanis Club or the PTA meeting or some other event where you're just hanging out with other people. How can I talk about what I do and why it's important in a way that makes sense to them? And so that's what Engage is all about. The last one we've got coming up in the short term is a webinar for members about our payment system. A couple of years ago, one of our members on the West Coast said, I'm paying a fortune on these credit card clearing fees for people that want to pay their bills with cards. Can you give me any help here? And so we've rolled up a program with a well-known banking institution to provide much more economical credit card clearing. And so we'll have a member webinar just to educate them on where that program is coming up in August.
Learn more online, aradc.org. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, that act, Madam Chair, is extraordinarily important because it provides a vehicle through which we can provide the level of technical assistance that farmers and producers and ranchers need to be able to understand and appreciate climate smart practices. And we've been providing technical assistance to both the House and the Senate Ag committees in an effort to try to find common ground.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, as he was answering a question from the chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow.
In terms of the Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Products Initiative, this is designed to essentially create opportunities for marketing of climate smart commodities. We think there's a value-added proposition. We think it's an opportunity to expand income for farmers, to be able to allow farmers to also qualify for ecosystem benefits. We're very, very pleased with the reaction from farmers and ranchers. We listened to them. They asked us to set up this pilot. They asked us to provide resources to enable farmers to aggregate their efforts. This is an effort that will result not only in adoption of climate smart practices and an acceleration of those practices, but an opportunity to measure and verify and quantify the results from those practices that will allow us to better understand how to essentially establish the standards for climate smart commodities. It's also a way in which we're enhancing the notion of partnerships and leverage. And finally, it's a chance for us to really understand, to be ahead of the game, for American agriculture to lead not just our own domestic effort, but internationally, to respond back and to push back a little bit on some of the other approaches to this that are occurring in other parts of the world that we think will jeopardize the ability to increase productivity. We think that there is an opportunity to increase productivity and be sustainable at the same time. This is part of an overall strategy that not only includes this initiative, but taking a look at 33 climate smart practices and having our NRCS folks work collaboratively with farmers to adopt those practices. It's about renewable energy. It's about forestry and better forest management. It's about a workforce. It's about adaptation mitigation. And we're trying to sort of address this in a very comprehensive way.
But it also brings into question some changes to the Conservation Reserve or CRP program.
First of all, we have basically taken a look at the acres that are currently in that program. And many, if not most of those acres, are really not very productive. I mean, it's not as if we're taking a significant amount of productive land out of production. We basically have been focusing on highly erodible areas that are not particularly productive. Having said that, we also trust farmers to make the right decision for their own operation. And in fact, farmers have actually made the decision to actually take about 1 million acres or so, maybe a little bit more than 1 million acres, out of the program this year. We have not created additional incentives to try to encourage more sign-up. We're well below the cap in this program. And frankly, we've got two challenges here. We've got a global food security challenge today that you've addressed in part, but we also have a longer-term global food security challenge in terms of climate and the impact on production internationally long-term. And we're trying to make sure that we're paying attention to both of these. And I think we will provide additional flexibilities when and if it's necessary. And we have done that in the past with haying and grazing. And we'll continue to look for ways in which we can provide assistance. But right now, more than 1 million acres coming out of that program, into production. We think that farmers can be trusted to make the right decisions. And they always have the right, as you know, to be able to leave the program whenever they so choose.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Earlier this month, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told his Canadian counterpart,
"We were very disappointed, greatly disappointed, in the Canadian response
to the successful U.S. challenge to Canada's dairy tariff rate quota policies within the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. That response last March was revised policies that provide only current and further processor and distributors be able to apply and be granted TRQ allocations, allocations to be parceled out at months at a time. On Wednesday, our nation filed a second USMCA dispute against Canadian dairy policy. The U.S. notes the revised Canadian policy would exclude other eligible applicants for TRQs, such as retailers and food processors, and further violates USMCA by not fully allocating its TRQs at the beginning of the year. Secretary Vilsack, in a statement, said the U.S. is considering all options available to assure Canadian market access for U.S. dairy products. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.